Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we're going to have a fascinating, fascinating program. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Harold Gordon, and we're going to be talking about his book, The Last Sunrise. And it's a true story. And, of course, we saw the movie recently, The Pianist, which was the story of what happened in Warsaw to the Jewish community who were put into a ghetto. And then, of course, as the members of the community were taken out to be exterminated, and, of course, the pianist survives. Well, we saw that story, and my wife said, I read this story a long time ago, a very similar story. It was a story of a man in another Jewish community, another Jewish ghetto in Poland. And of course, she described some of what had been happened in Grodno, in the ghetto in Grodno. So we got hold of the book, and I've been reading it, and it is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, and a book which you'll certainly want to read. Mr. Gordon, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon.
You're welcome, Dr. Mentat. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, fine. Well, we're going, of course, to wait till we get all the stations together before Mr. Gordon is going to tell you and just go over a prepared statement. But this really gives you such an insight into what really happened in Europe. And, of course, you've seen a lot of movies about it. But, of course, this is written a first-hand account of a boy. How old were you when
10 years old when it began.
10 years old. When it began. And, of course, it's just this entire story of what happened, you know, living as a boy and in a community, and his father is a barber, and they have a very happy family. And of course, there's a much community among the Jewish people in their town. And then, of course, what happens, of course, when the Nazis come to their community. And this, as the story unfolds, and we're going to be talking about that for the next hour, I think you'll find it's so very, very almost impossible to believe that this sort of thing could happen. It could happen then, but it could never happen again. And that, of course, one of the big problems we have today is that so many people think, well, that happened then. But, of course, mankind has not really changed. There really are people out there who have a different worldview. There are people, there is evil. And, of course, this is one of the basic tenets that we talk about all the time. There really are evil and wicked people in the world. Until we are willing to face that, until we're willing to face the fact that we're not getting all of the information that we really, really need to understand what's going on in the world here in the United States. And although we hear some of the stories, we cannot many times put them into a proper perspective. And so I think that you will find that the program we're going to be having during this next hour, you won't want to miss. And we hope many of you are wanting to actually get copies of both the tape and you'll want to get copies of the book. So we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. Harold Gordon talking about his book, The Last Sunrise, a true story, and I would add, a truly unforgettable story. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, I want to start out by telling you our guest this afternoon is Mr. Harold Gordon. His book is called The Last Sunrise. It's a true story of a boy who's 10 years old when, of course, the Nazis come into his town in Poland. And, of course, I just wanted to share with you something that was written by Elie Wiesel. It was called One Generation After 1970. And I really think this epitomizes what we're talking about today. Let me read this because I think something is so vitally important. Spring, 1945. Emerging from the nightmare, the world discovers the camps, the death factories, the senseless horror, the debasement, the absolute reign of evil. Victory, taste of ashes. Yes, it's possible to defile life and creation and feel no remorse, to tend one's garden and water one's flowers, but two steps away from barbed wire, to experiment with monstrous mutations and still believe in the soul and immortality, to go on vacations, be enthralled by the beauty of a landscape, make children laugh, and still fulfill, regularly, day in and day out, the duties of a killer. There was then a technique, a science of murder, complete with specialized laboratories, business meetings, and progress charts. Those engaged in its practice didn't belong to a gutter society or misfits, nor could they be dismissed as just a collection of rabble. Many held degrees of philosophy, sociology, biology, general medicine, psychiatry, and fine arts. There were lawyers among them, and unthinkable but true, theologians. And that, of course, is the story of what happened during the Nazi era in Germany. And of course, what people don't understand is that sometimes people with a great deal of education have lost the moral foundation built upon God. It takes a lot of university training, a lot, of course, reading of philosophy to do away with that inherent belief in a God, that we are responsible for what we do and someday we will stand before the bar of judgment. But on our universities today, as they did in Germany, two generations ago, they removed that moral foundation, and you had men who were doing what was expedient rather than what was right. And as we explore Mr. Gordon's book, The Last Sunrise, you'll find he lived out, he saw what it was like when you have people in positions of power who, of course, have no moral foundation, who believe that they know what is best for the world. And, of course, they had targeted one specific ethnic group, or one specific racial group, for this and religious group for extermination. And so we'll be back here in just a moment with, I think, one of the most amazing stories you've heard, the story of the last sunrise, and it's told by Mr. Harold Gordon. Well, Mr. Gordon, why don't you pick up and, of course, tell us what you'd like to about your book.
Dr. Stan, thank you. Some say I'm an expert on hate. Others call me an ambassador for peace and tolerance. The fact is that I'm both. I was and always will be a 10-year-old child who lost everything I owned and everyone whom I loved. I was robbed of my childhood and deprived of my education in the Holocaust. In spite of all those hardships and atrocities, I emerged healthy in body and in mind by letting go of hate, anger, and intolerance, putting hate on hold, and focusing on the future for a better life for myself and for my family yet to be. My name is Harold Gordon now, but 63 years ago, I was a 10-year-old child whose name was Herschel Kordinsky. I lived with my family in Grodno, Poland, a city of 65,000 inhabitants, 30,000 of the Jewish faith, and 35,000 the majority of Catholic persuasion. We lived in peace most of the time. Now, within months after the Nazis occupied Grodno, my entire family, except for my father and I, were gassed, burned, and vaporized without leaving a trace of their existence. All those years, while I was in prison in Auschwitz and in Dachau and other extermination camps, while others were grabbing the electrified fence wires to end their life, I kept praying to God. And often, when the pain became too much to bear, I would say, God, if you let me live, I promise to take revenge. I will kill every Nazi, every German ever crossed my path. I will make him pay for taking my family from me and leaving me without a burial site to visit. Let me live, God, I said in my mind. I will keep my promise. God, please let me live the promise I will keep. On May 1945, the war ended. I was alive. It was time for me to keep my promise. I began thinking, how many Nazis can I kill before I die? 10? 100? 1,000? Then what? Who will remember my mother, brother, grandparents, aunt and uncle after I'm gone? I said to God, God, please forgive me for not keeping my promise. I have another plan in its place. I will build a good life for myself, a life that my mother and heaven would be proud of. I will raise a family, leave behind descendants, so they will, my brother, be grandchildren to remember them long after I'm gone. Their footprints are permanently imprinted in my mind as a reminder that they once lived and walked this earth. I will not forget my ancestors. I will put my memories in the deepest corner of my brain and to recall them before my days on earth have ended. Many decades later, in this country, and suddenly without warning, I heard a call. Something began rumbling in my brain like a volcano. I knew it was time for me to fulfill my second promise. I sat down at my computer every night after work like a video. It appeared right before my eyes. And 2 years later, my book, The Last Hundred, was completed. My family's dignity and images will be preserved. As a result of my decision to put hate on hold, my book, The Last Sunrise, was born. I replaced anger and negative with tolerance, which is positive, just, honorable, and impartial.
Well, of course, the book is really very, very powerful. And, of course, the book starts on a 10-year-old child. He doesn't understand much of anything going on. And then, of course, the Nazis come in. And those of you who've seen the movie, The Pianist, one of the first things they did is they moved all the Jews into one part of the town. And then, of course, they put a big stone or a brick wall up around that. And there, they, of course, they kept all the Jews separated from everybody else. Now, were there some of the Poles, the Catholics, who, of course, traded with you or helped some of the Jews?
Oh, yes. Over the wire, over the fence. We'd throw them some of our clothes, and they'd throw us a loaf of bread. And this is how we survived a whole year, before we were put on death trains to take us to Auschwitz.
And of course, if what they would do is they would just come into the ghetto and they would take out about 2,000 people at a time, and they would tell them they were going to Germany to work in the factories. But of course, that wasn't what they were really going to do. They were taking them off to be killed. And of course, but the average Jewish person living in the ghetto could not believe that anybody would really want to just kill all a whole race of people. Wasn't it sort of a case of denial that this is true? Didn't some people come and tell you what was happening, but the average person couldn't believe it?
That's exactly correct. Actually, there were 20,000 people in our ghetto, and when some of them returned who escaped and told us of the atrocities, nobody believed them. That's because it's impossible. Who would want to kill innocent people? And what good is it if we're dead? Wouldn't it be better if they took us and made us as slaves work in the factories or in the fields so we can help their machine? And then after the war, whoever survived will live. Nobody believed that. Now, in the Warsaw ghetto, there were 500,000 Jews. And it wasn't until most of them were gone, until there was only 20,000, that they actually believed it. And that's when they had an uprising. And during that uprising, it took the Nazis 3 months, and they couldn't even defeat the 20,000 that were there. So they replaced the general who was in charge of the event, and they burned down the entire ghetto with everyone in it.
And, of course, this is the sort of thing that we find very difficult to believe, but you must understand that there really are people, intellectuals, who have no compassion at all, whether they were the German Nazis or perhaps even intellectuals in America today, who are not that concerned about human life. But as I read your book, I always had a feeling that time and again, God protected you. Did you have that feeling as a little boy that, I mean, you saw death? I remember that story you told about being in the railway car with 100 people, and there was no air, but there was a little window there you could look out, and you actually, your father put you up on his shoulder so you could look out the window, and of course some big bully come in and pushed you out of the way so he could look up there, and he no sooner put his head in the window and somebody blew his head off.
That's exactly correct. Yes, I did feel that I was saved by God for a purpose. And I think the purpose was for me to have a successful, honorable life and to teach others to let go of hate, anger, and resentment. And since 10 years ago, or 11 years ago, and since I retired from my business, I spent all the time doing public service, speaking to churches of all denominations, schools, universities, high schools, the juvenile halls, all sorts of organizations like Lions Club, Rotary Clubs, and speaking about tolerance and forgiveness.
And, of course, there was another instance when you were in the railway car and somebody shot a bullet in there, and the man next to you, they blew off his ear, and it grazed your arm, and then, of course, went into the stomach of the fellow sitting next to you.
That's right. I'm surprised that you remember all those things. The train stopped at the railroad station because we didn't know where we were going. We were going to Auschwitz, to the death camp, but we had no idea. And there was a German soldier, I guess it was an SS Nazi, on top of the roof. He had nothing better to do, so he just pointed his rifle downward and fired one shot. Well, inside the car, we were sitting five in a row, 20 rows, 100 per car, 3,000 people per car. And we just had a little bend. We didn't seem like very much. Well, the person right in front of me, the bullet went through his ear. And of course, he began bleeding profusely. And I was behind him, sort of in an angle, so the bullet grazed my elbow, only the skin. And it didn't even bleed very much, just grazed it. And of course, it fired again in an angle, the bullet in an angle, so the person behind me got it right in the middle of the stomach. And he took 2 days to die. But now the person whose ear was injured, was taken out alive, and they were killed instantly when we got to Auschwitz.
Because anybody, of course, wasn't in a position to walk into the death camps where they were gassed, was immediately executed. And, of course, the most amazing thing, though, why don't you tell the story of your marching into the area where they're going to be gassed? And of course, you knew. You and your father had already talked to other people, so you knew far better than most people.
Well,
what was coming.
We really didn't know. We really didn't know until we got there. Because all the time that we were riding from Grodno, Poland to Auschwitz, it was a five-day journey. And during the time, our train often stopped and let army troops trains use the railroad track. And we kept sort of looking through the cracks of the car to see which direction we were going. We were passing, sort of going west, and we thought we were going to Germany to work. But then when the train finally came to a halt and turned around, the locomotive got behind the train and began pushing in the kind of backwards direction, and through the cracks we saw a gate open up, and on top there was big letters in German, Arbeit macht frei, and that means that work makes you free. It translates to work makes you free. And then we were reassured that everything was fine and that we were only going to work there. But once the train got inside, the locomotive unhooked and left, the gates closed, A battalion of SS troops surrounded the train on top and behind and all around with some machine guns, only 6 feet apart. Everyone was ordered to quickly to leave the train and form a column of five. Even the dead people had to be taken out and counted. And there were two people there from previous, they were called kapos, from previous transports where they were given a little extra food and they were helping the Nazis through the process.
And these were Jewish people.
They were Jewish people, right? But they would do anything for food. And my father asked him, why are we going down to, don't you know? He says, Auschwitz is the death camp. Can't you see the crematorium? It was only about 50 feet away from us.
All right. Well,
we could see the smoke and could smell the flesh burning.
All right. Well, we'll let you tell the rest of that story when we get back here. But I have to understand, of course, that after the war, before the war ended, the Nazis tried to destroy all the evidence of what had happened. So if you go to Auschwitz now, you won't see the crematorium that was there. And people say, oh, nothing like that ever happened, you know. This couldn't have been. Of course not. They destroyed the evidence. And there's every effort made today to confuse the American people of the reality of the evil that really exists. We'll be back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty.
The book that will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Carr's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Carr's book, Due to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi, and there's no better time to establish a biological response kit in your home. In an age when we hear about biological threats, more common are cases of E. coli in our food, cryptosporidium in our tap water, and staph germs, viruses, and molds in our air conditioning system. Why be a sitting duck and run to the doctor after you've got a problem? Why not take something to stay healthy, like Alamex, the all-new 100% pure allicin garlic extract. You won't find Alamex in stores, but you'll find it by calling 866-405-4000. Alamex is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. And guess what? It's odor-free. Call 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that in times like this, really at any time, but having a water filter on hand is can be a very, very valuable thing. And of course, if there should ever be a problem, why, you could always filter a pool water or creek water or river water or pond water. But of course, if you don't like the taste of your water, sometimes the people will have water they really don't like the taste of it. Sometimes well water tastes badly. Sometimes municipal water will have too much in the way of chlorine and other things in it, so it just doesn't taste good. Well, the big working water filter is a sort of filter that the missionaries have used for well over 100 years. It's a stainless steel container that'll take 2.5 gallons of water and filter through ceramic filters filled with activated carbon, and of course the water goes in the top, comes out the bottom. It's portable. You can use it at home. You can use it in your recreational vehicle. You can use it any place you want to. A wonderful means of getting water, and of course you can actually clean the filters over and over again. The Big Berkey, ordinarily they're $279. They're $239 from Radio Liberty, and of course if you buy it through us, you get a 4-tape set or a video that we produce. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for the Big Berkey water filter. But they're not available in California or Iowa. If you'd like to get something that is available in every state in the Union but Iowa, why, that, of course, is a Berkey light. And that is actually transparent. That's what we have. And you can see the water level in it. And, of course, they have, instead of the ceramic filters, they have the black Berkey filters. They're really excellent filters. We call them purifiers because they'll certainly take out literally all the bacteria. And, of course, they'll take out certainly so many of the other chemicals and heavy metals. They do not take out fluoride. You can get special attachments for both the Big Berkey and the Berkey light for the fluoride. If you'd like to see the Berkey light or the Big Berkey, go to our website at 1-800-544-Go to our website at radioliberty.com. If you want to order this, it's $199, and we also offer you the tape set, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this afternoon is Harold Gordon, his book, The Last Sunrise, A True Story. And Harold was telling us, now, he, and of course, this time he's probably maybe 13 years old, and he's being, of course, taken into Auschwitz. He's been in, starved and, of course, cold and frozen and for several years already. And, of course, now they're being taken into the, of course, to be gassed. And he and his father realize what's happened. They've been told by the Jews who are working there for the Germans, just trying to survive. I mean, they would take the healthier people and put them to work to herd the Jews in so that the SSS would not do it. It would be the Jews herding the, in many respects, the people into the crematorium. Of course, the SS was there with their machine guns. So basically, of course, you're being marched straight ahead, and you're almost fatalistic. There's no escape. There's nothing you can do. And what happens at the last minute?
I was alarmed by the response that death was imminent. It was utterly unbelievable to me. And I held my father's hand, and my first thing that I wanted to do is not to alarm my dad. So I didn't even squeeze his hand. I didn't say, "Dad, are we really going to die?" I just stood there in shock. And then while I was doing all this thinking, a command was given, column left face and forward march. And by that time I began calculating how much longer I have to live. Maybe about 5 more minutes until I was at the end of the column, until the column came to the pivot that turned into the gates of the crematorium, which was about 5 minutes away. So I think I got 5 minutes to live. Then to go to the gate, maybe another 3 minutes, probably another 4 minutes of that. To get undressed, that's maybe 13, 14 minutes. And I don't know how long it takes to die, maybe 6 or 7, maybe 23 minutes. And by that time, I was almost at the corner. I said, "Oh my gosh, I got to refigure. I don't have that much to live anymore." As I turned the corner to go to the crematorium, the gates were only 50 feet away. I looked to the right, and there was a gazebo with Jewish women with all the hair shaved off in long prison uniforms, long dresses, striped dresses, blue and white, playing waltzes and Bach and Mozart and nice music, like going to a party.
And they basically had a band there. They had a band, right?
They had an orchestra, playing. And I could see piled up bodies way in the distance, just piled up, because I realized that the gas process was much faster than the burning process. And then I saw the prisoners, very thin, skinny prisoners with wheelbarrows, wheeling dead bodies to those piles. And as I was getting near the gate, there was a German officer, which was a commander, I suppose, and two young lieutenants kind of parading around. They had been doing it every day for days, a kind of routine to them. But as I got near the gate, within 5 feet, I turned around and looked at him. And he had a cane with a handle, with a curved handle. He just took the cane by the bottom, by the end, and put a cane around my neck and pulled me out of line. My father held my hand, so he came also. And then he put another cane, as a cane around someone else's hand, pulled another person out. By the time the 3,000 people got inside and the gates closed, there were 11 of us. Only 11 of us. I was the youngest outside the gate. We were taken to barracks. We were given a bath and given you clothes, but I showered, and I thought it was going to be another gas chamber, but it wasn't. It was real showers. And we were the only ones who got tattooed of the entire...
The 3,000 were on the train with you, and Chris, then you were to be utilized to take care of the clothes from all the people who had took them off before they went into big gas.
That's right. I cannot talk about that. That's too gruesome.
All right, fine. And Chris, then how long were you with that?
I was in Auschwitz for a whole year. And actually, I thought I was only going to be there a day or a week, a month at the most. And what happened every day at 5 o'clock... there would be a reveille. There would be a wake-up call at 5 a.m. Everybody had to run outside. We were always dressed anyway. We never took our clothes off. And we had a form in a column of five to be counted. And all the barracks were counted. All the dead and the sick had to be put out to be counted. We had to stand in detention. And if the count was wrong, if someone was missing, there was a recount. We had to stand again. And all this time, while we were standing in detention, I was facing east. And I saw the sunrise. I said, "God, thank you for giving me this extra day to live, because today I will live. After work tonight, who knows what will happen." And every day that I lived, I thank God for the sunrise, because I thought I was watching the last sunrise. Unfortunately, it lasted for almost 360 days.
All right, we're going to be back in just a few more minutes, and we'll of course go over this incredible story, and the book. We'll tell you how to get the book, because I actually think we probably even carry it through Radio Liberty, because it's such a powerful a book. It's a very simple book, but it's a story that every person who today needs to read to understand that it happened in the past, and there's certainly no reason it could not happen again. Of course, until men's hearts are changed, and there is compassion, and we return to worship of our Maker. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I want to mention that we do carry Miracle 2 soap products, and of course we carry them because they work. We've been very, very happy with them, and we can't make any medical claims for them. I will tell you, a lot of the people who use the products do make claims for them, and sometimes the story they really tell are very, very gratifying, and certainly we really are very impressed by it. All I can do is tell you there is a soap, there's a neutralizing soap, there is a neutralizing solution which is very alkaline. Some people take it and they say that it helps their epigastric distress, their heartburn. I know my wife's used that and been very, very happy with it. And of course, there's a lotion and a gel. If you'd like to learn more about the Miracle 2 soap products, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Or better still, call that number and order an introductory set of the products. I think you'll be very happy that you do, because most people are. And then, of course, we want to mention Phenopoly. And if you have children or grandchildren out there who are gone to government schools, why, you need to teach them how to read phonetically, because they've deliberately dumbed down our children. Most of them really are not able to read phonetically, and they can't spell phonetically. They have not been given that opportunity for a proper introduction to reading. And so if you'd like, of course, to get a Phenopoly set, and most of these programs are $500, $600, $700, and this is $139.95, and in 16 hours you can undo all the harm that has been done. These children, your children and grandchildren, will begin to sound out the words. They'll learn the 40 basic sounds of the English language, the 12 basic rules, and it will really transform their whole outlook. And it's not just for children. I've had people 50 and 60 years old tell me they've got the program. They love it. Phenopoly. 5 board games, 2 bonus games, we throw in a couple of books. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're not going to take any calls until we have, of course, this entire story told. And our guest today is Mr. Harold Gordon. We're talking about his book, The Last Sunrise, A True Story. Mr. Gordon, how can people get copies of your book if they'd like to?
One way is to www.peace2.com or amazon.com.
Peace2.com, okay.
And of course,
go ahead.
It's your radio station, Radio Liberty.
All right, fine. Well, this is an amazing book. You can go to your bookstore, ask for The Last Sunrise, A True Story. Or if you'd like to, of course, you can contact us. And I really think that we'd like to carry the book, because it is a powerful, powerful book. I got started reading it. I was went to a meeting this weekend, read it on the plane, going both ways. And it's a book that's very, very difficult to put down, because you just maybe you're wondering how he's ever going to get out of this impossible situation. And time and time and time again, why, his life is preserved when everybody else around him is dying. And here you're talking, by this time you were, what, about 13 years old?
Well, at that time I was about 13.
Right. And of course, you've been at this for already for almost four long years, just struggling to survive. And of course, the Russians are coming, and so you are evacuated from Auschwitz. Why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, actually, what happened, there was a call for tailors at Auschwitz. And they needed tailors. Well, I was 13 years old, or maybe not quite. My grandfather was a tailor. So I said, I was a tailor. My father said, he was a tailor. And they took us. They took us to Oranienburg, a company, another camp, where they were making uniforms. And they put me on a buttonhole machine to make buttonholes for the German uniforms. And of course, it wasn't difficult for me to learn, so that's what I did for a while until the Americans bombed the entire camp. And then they moved us again, so they moved us to Dachau. And that was my last camp.
All right, fine. Of course, Dachau is a suburb right outside of Munich. And that was one of the camps that I was at. And I suspect that they really destroyed a lot of the things that were in that camp, too, as well as at Auschwitz and Buchenwald and all the others, because they didn't want to leave the evidence for history, as they knew. And so I suspect that they destroyed, certainly, they did destroy the crematorium at many of the major camps, didn't they?
They did, but in Dachau, some of it remained intact. As a matter of fact, I took my family back there in 1970 and show them my camp, where I was, crematorium, and everything.
All right, fine. And, of course, I remember actually going in there and seeing the room where they had the shower heads, but they really weren't shower heads. They were simply simulated shower heads. And, of course, were they gassing a large number of people at Dachau or what?
Oh, yes, there were. I don't know how many, but there were thousands and thousands. If I may just bring up one point, right towards the end, on April 30th, is a very significant day in my life. April 30th at 6 a.m. in the morning, the order was given by Hitler to destroy all crematoriums. And also an order was given by him to kill all political prisoners in the mountains wherever they could without crematoriums. Also on that day, Hitler died, committed suicide. And also on that day in the afternoon, an American battalion liberated Dachau. And not me and my column were on our way to the mountains of Tyrol, there to be executed by gunshot.
In other words, basically what they did. Now, there were a lot of prisoners at Dachau who were political prisoners, weren't they, as well as the Jews?
Well, not then. Before, I heard there was 80,000 political German prisoners that were put there.
What happened to them, do you know?
Well, they were all exterminated. They all died.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that they never talk about in America, and Professor Norman Cohn talks about it in his book, War for Genocide, and of course he's writing from a Jewish perspective, that there are 12 million others besides the 6 million Jews who died in the concentration camps. But we never talk about that in America. We wouldn't want to, of course, upset anybody here. This is always something that happens to other people, and you wonder why that would be. We'd never talk about it. So there are about 80,000. Were they primarily political prisoners or what?
They're all political prisoners.
And they exterminated those, and then they left the camp open then for the Jews to be brought
That's
in.
That's right. And then they also exterminated the Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, physically handicapped, mentally retarded, gypsies, people that were useless to the Reich, to the German Reich, exterminated. If I have a couple of moments,
go right ahead.
I'd like to talk about my final escape from Dachau.
All right.
How I was liberated. We were put on a column of, I think it was 10,000 people on a death march. We were going to the mountains of Tyrol, and there to be shot in a valley. On the third day, we went through a forest. There was a clearing. And the Germans were walking on both sides, and because all prisoners were very weak, walking in the middle. On the third day of our transport, I saw two small little planes in the sky. And I stood and looked at them, and they suddenly came down behind us and dived down on a column. They thought we were German soldiers. The German soldiers hit the deck, the ditches, and they hollered to us to lay down and get onto the ground. And, of course, I never saw a plane before, so I was curious. I stood up, so did a few others. And I could see the American pilots that were at treetop levels. I could see the white star on the fuselage. I could even see the goggles and the leather hat that the pilot was wearing, and looking in both directions, I could even see his round patch with yellow and blue and the red stripe through it. I'll never forget it.
And of course, you were wearing a striped uniform at the time.
Oh, yeah. They knew we were prisoners.
Right. So
they dropped the bomb before the convoy and one afterwards, and they took off in the sky. The Germans got us up real fast and made us run out of this clearing. And they came, these two planes turned around. And again, the Germans began shouting, "Everyone get down, everyone get down, hit the ground." And they went down in the ditches. And the two planes began strafing along the ditches where the German guards were, because you could see them very plain, only about 50, 60 feet up in the air. I saw there was a nearby forest, about maybe 200 yards away. So I began running to the forest, and my father came with me. He didn't want me to be alone, and a few others began running. And as we were running as fast as we could, the plane must have been out of fuel. They took off, and they disappeared in the sky. The Germans got arrested. My mom says, "Come on, let's move out." And to us, they kept shouting, "Zurück," which means hurry up and come back. And some of them turned around and come back. And then they start shouting again, "Zurück, or we'll shoot, come back, or we'll shoot." And they began shooting. And I could see people falling on either side of me. I could even hear bullets whistling by my ears. And I kept praying again to God, "God, I'm only 50 feet from the forest. I hope I don't get hit, but if I get hit, could I get hit in the arm and not in my leg so I can keep on running till I touch those trees?" And God willing, I ran, hit the trees, and ran further into the forest until we passed out from exhaustion. There's only five of us left.
All right, Father, but your father was still with you. And
father was still with
you. And, of course, you're dressed in these striped uniforms, so the Germans figure that you'll never be able to get away because you'll be picked up by other German
citizens. It didn't pay for them to just go root us out. I mean, they had too many to take to the mountains.
And, of course, they were going to kill them all.
Of course, and they did.
And they did. And they so did. You were really, once again, miraculously, you were saved.
Yeah. I don't know why, but there must have been a reason.
I'm sure there was, in God's knowledge and God's plan for humanity. So then what happened?
Towards the end, 3 days into the forest, we lived on melted snow, water, and nothing else, we hear tanks coming down the same road that we were watching just 3 days before. That was on May 5, 1945. And I got closer to the trees, and I could see the tanks, and I could see a white star painted on the green tanks, and I knew it wasn't a German, it wasn't the Iron Cross. It was some kind of star that was on the plane that I saw only 3 days before. So the five of us began running towards the tanks. And the soldiers saw us, so they gave us food and chocolate and put us on top of the tanks and took us into Munich. And we were free.
And what an amazing thing now, it really has been almost 5 years that you've been in prison during this period of time, at least 4 years that you've been living in the ghetto, and then, of course, from one concentration camp to another. And so what did you do? Suddenly you're free, but you don't have any money, you don't have any family. I mean, there's just you and your father, everybody else, your grandmother, your mother, your brother, everybody else in your family has been killed.
I didn't know. We just walked around Munich. There was nothing there but ruins. We were looking for food, couldn't find any. We saw a cellar with windows near the at the bottom near the sidewalk. So we broke the window there so we could go spend the night. And it was a wine cellar. So we found wine, but no food. Well, the next day, we went back to the company that rescued us, and they drove us into Munich. And my father got a job to be as a barber, and I got a job doing KP duty, which is peeling potatoes and doing dishes.
But at least you had something to eat, huh?
Oh, it was the best job in the world. I had all the food, and my father was making tips like 50 cents from this soldier and from that soldier. We found an American soldier who could speak Polish, so we gave him the money. He converted into U.S. dollars, sent it to his father in Chicago. His father sent us. Sent it to his uncle in Los Angeles. And a year after a year, there was $1,000 there, enough to pay for our passage. And I also had some extra food that was going to be thrown away. So I put it in those gallon cans that the army had and put two holes on each side and put a wire through it. And I had a little time I carried and sold it to the German people for a quarter, 50 cents, whatever I could get. And I would give that money to that Polish soldier. And he sent it to my uncle.
And, of course, I think the thing that people have to understand is that everybody was decimated. I mean, I was in Munich after the Second World War, and you know, it was just ruins. I mean, there were certainly a few of the Bahnhofes building. That was the station, the train station was intact, but so much of the city was destroyed. Some of it, fortunately, was preserved, but terrible, terrible devastation all throughout Germany. And it was not only the people in the concentration camps, those few who survived, of course, were there, but certainly the German people.
The German people, too. They lost all their men towards the end of the war, near the end of the war. The soldiers were 13, 14, and 15-year-old kids. They put them on trains. They put helmets on them that fell over their eyes. They had sleeves that were 12 inches longer than their arms, and the boots that were way too big for them. They put them on trains, sent them to the Russian front. 4 days later, they'd come back without legs, without arms, with bandaged heads. We saw it all. And during the war, there was no German man in Germany.
And of course, those that did survive or were captured were sent to the Soviet Gulag, and they perished
right.
there. And this is the sort of thing that people don't understand. They don't remember that 25,000 American soldiers ended up going to the Gulag, and of course Dwight Eisenhower did nothing at all about that. But that's the horror of that war. Is not real. You see it on a motion picture, but after reading the book and seeing the motion picture, I think it brought it closer to me than at any other time. And I think it's amazing that you've been able to maintain your response to this, because it would be so easy just to be filled with hatred. I know when I was there as a young soldier, there was a gentleman there who'd been, was a doctor, a physician, but of course he'd come over to Europe the same time I did, but he was so filled with hatred. He was still looking for some of those German concentration camp guards that he wanted to settle a score with, but I think that consumed him.
I have a very short little statement for the audience.
Go right ahead.
This generation of young adults, our current generation, are thirsting for more men and women with integrity in every level of our society to respect and to admire, in government, business, education, and in the clergy. It is my hope that in this generation, many men and women with vision and with good character here and in the Middle East will step forward to fill the vacuum in the above-mentioned categories. It is my hope that soon leaders in the clergy of all faith will see the light, choose to respect other faiths. Only then is coexistence not only possible, but it can flourish. God bless you all.
Well, I thank you so very much, and I agree with you totally. And, of course, we have somehow to overcome the hatred that's developing between the Muslim and the Christian, and the Muslim and the Jew, and the Jew and the Christian. But, of course, it's all being fanned, I believe, unfortunately, intentionally. I think there are growing racism. I get it's constantly attacked on email because I won't attack this group or this religious sect because I believe that it's totally non-productive. And yet, of course, why, how can you? You must obviously be part of this or that or the other thing. There are so many people out there who don't realize how fortunate they are to live in America. And, of course, we have to be tolerant of others and their beliefs. But I think that your experience certainly will have a profound impact on everybody who hears your story. Are you being asked to speak very frequently?
Yes. I give graduation addresses at high schools. I'm speaking at Catholic churches and going in Spreckles. I spoke to Stanford, University of California, in Santa Cruz, in Monterey Bay, and all the schools around this area, and many churches of all denominations.
Well, of course, Mr. Gordon actually lives over in Salinas. We were able to track him down. The book is about 12, 14 years old, but it still has a number there. And so, once again, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, and if they would like to have you come to their church or their organization. What is that, peace2.com?
Peace2.com.
Now, is that Peace T-O or Peace...
Peace number two.
Peace2.com, if you'd like to. And what will they find on the web page?
Well, they find a little history about me in the book and how to order.
All right.
And they're going to email me. Email is very easy also. It's just HG. For Harold Gordon, HG@peace2.com.
OKHG at peace2.com. And, of course, well, I want to thank you so very much for being our guest. I hope we can get you on to our other programs. As you know, we do about 5 hours every day with four different audiences, then a weekend program. But I really want people to hear your story, and I would hope that they would read this story to make your experience very real, with hope and prayer that nobody in America will ever have to go through something similar. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that certainly is Mr. Harold Gordon. And that really is, as you read the story, they would pack 100 people into a boxcar, and they would transfer them 5 days without food or water. What a terrible thing to think of. And yet, of course, in Afghanistan, recently, the Northern Alliance, under American supervision, would take 100 or 200 Taliban and pack them into the back of a truck and cart them for days at a time, and they would suffocate and die of starvation. And hundreds of them died in those trucks. And, of course, we were financing the whole thing, and nobody has been held responsible for that. And, you know, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And our hope, of course, is the American people will begin looking at what's going on and realizing that it could happen again. And I just simply recall what Elie Wiesel said in his 20 years after about there was then a technique, a science of murder, complete with specialized laboratories, business meetings, and progress charts. Those engaged in this practice didn't belong to a gutter society of misfits, nor were they dismissed as just a collection of rabble. Many held degrees in philosophy, sociology, biology, general medicine, psychiatry, and the fine arts. There were lawyers among them, and unthinkable but true, theologians. Could it happen again? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.
Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination date.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that many people are being affected by rising health care costs that are putting their families at risk. If you're in that category, you're not alone. Millions of Americans don't have any health care protection at all, and one major medical problem can mean financial ruin. But there is an answer for Christian families, MediShare, and of course it's a Christian alternative that brings believers together to share medical bills. MediShare is affordable. You'll save thousands of dollars of your medical costs while providing real security for your family. MediShare is biblical. This is a community of committed, caring Christians who'll be there in your time of need. They'll share your medical bills, pray for you, and send cards and letters of encouragement. And to learn more about MediShare, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we'll have you contacted by the people there at MediShare. And then, of course, we certainly want to mention to those of you who are listening some of the items that we carry, and certainly we have my book, if you haven't read it, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get it because it will explain to you the spiritual forces behind the Nazi movement and the realization that some of those same spiritual forces that were there under Adolf Hitler are here today. And those of you who haven't heard our Saturday afternoon program we did on the Project Paperclip, of how many of the Nazis were brought to the United States after the Second World War. We helped the Nazis escape to South America. You must understand that there really is evil in the world. And here in America, we had both the good, the Christian, and then we had the evil. We had the two forces at work here. And until American people understand that, if you'd like to get the book, The Medusa File, that talks about Operation Paperclip, if you order that today and ask for the article, pardon me, the tape on it. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, if you'd like to know about Operation Paperclip, it goes into the background of how actually after the Second World War, the CIA, OSS, brought many of the Nazi war criminals to the United States and, of course, helped others to escape to South America. Of course, the book is called The Medusa File. And, of course, if you order that today and you specifically ask for my discussion of Operation Paperclip, we did a Saturday program on that. We should do an afternoon program. Maybe we will one of these days. But we'll get you, ask for that. We'll get that to you free of charge. If you order The Medusa File today, just ask for the tape. But this is only going to be for today. So if you're going to do it, ask for it today. Order The Medusa File and then ask for the free tape, and we'll be glad to provide that for you. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will be interested in knowing what happened to the head of the German Gestapo. His name was Heinrich Müller. Did you know that Heinrich Müller was brought to the United States and allowed to live here after the Second World War? The book is Gestapo Chief. And then, of course, for more detailed information, the Mueller Diaries. Certainly Heinrich Müller, the head of the German Gestapo, came here. Now, if that happened, why doesn't every American know that? And the reason you don't know it is because of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will want to become better informed about what's going on. We hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. There's 5 hours every day we reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And by radio, now we're on almost 57 outlets every week. And, of course, some of those are internet or satellite, but we're a growing number of radio stations. We have to pay for these radio stations. And quite frankly, we need your help so we can expand our coverage so more and more people will understand what is really going on in the world today. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do, and that is bring the truth to the American people and try to get them to begin to question what they've been taught in school. Now, we hope many of you, of course, will give serious consideration to setting up an institute in the Constitution in your community. If you'd like to do that and teach people about the history of America and why we formed a limited central government, the difference between a republic and a democracy, give them a call at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And ask for information on setting up an Institute of the Constitution in your area. And then, of course, we hope many of you out there will want to order a Phonopoly set. And you can get a Phonopoly set that you'll teach your children, your grandchildren, to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically for $139.95 right here at Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Ask about Phonopoly. We hope, of course, that some of you will want to learn about MediShare, which is a Christian health-sharing program. And, of course, for other Christians, will help share the cost of your medical care costs. It's a great program. If you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It can save you thousands and thousands of dollars a year in the cost of your health care. And then, of course, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like to see pictures of the Big Berkey water filter, of the Berkey Light water filter, know more about them, go to our website at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, you get them through Radio Liberty, either the Berkey Light or the Big Berkey. Why, you get a free 4-tape set, or you get a free video that we have produced. And so, please, pray for America. Pray for our leaders, pray for our ministers that they should be involved in this truly spiritual battle for the survival of mankind. And then we ask you to pray for revival, because if the people of this country don't turn back to God, then we're going to lose America. And finally, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye. And may the Lord be with you. Thank you. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. 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 Testing. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. 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 This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news. One, two, three, four. 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 One, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. This is Dr. Stan here at 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. One. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news. Behind the news, the story. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. One, two, three, four, five. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story.
Tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I...
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One, two, three, four, five. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Five, four, three, two, one. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty,
coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America ordinarily at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but we're not going to take any calls today. I want to tell you about my serious concern about the fact that the average American does not understand the form of government that has given them so much freedom for so many years. It was about 42 years ago, 41 years ago, when I came home after a busy day at the hospital where I worked as an orthopedic surgeon, and I sat down in front of the television, set to watch a television program, and of course I got the wrong channel, and there was a man standing there before a podium talking about how the fact that America was not a democracy. America was a republic. And there was all the difference between a republic and a democracy there was between day and night. And of course that came as quite a shock to me. I was a college graduate. I had a Phi Beta Kappa Chi. I had all sorts of honors, and to say that America wasn't a democracy, why that was like saying that evolution wasn't true, or that we didn't have the finest country in the world. Well, we do have the finest country in the world, but we're losing it because we really don't understand the difference between a republic and a democracy. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that issue today. We hear a lot about how we're going to the Middle East to establish democracy in Iraq and bring democracy to the Muslim countries. Do we really want to bring democracy to the Muslim countries? It was Thomas Jefferson who said that sometimes it's said that man cannot be trusted with the government of himself, then can he be trusted with the government of others? Or have we found angels in the form of kings to govern him? And of course, Thomas Jefferson also said, in questions of power, let no more be heard of confidence in men, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. And it was Plato who, in his treatise on the Republic, said, democracy passes into despotism. And of course, if you've ever studied the history of what's going on today, many people believe that somehow Christianity and democracy are intertwined, and nothing could be further from the truth. Now, most people have accepted some form of control over their lives in the form of government because they wanted to avoid anarchy, and so governments were established among men to enact rules to protect the lives and liberty and property of our students and of the citizens. But once the basic rights of men were secured, additional laws were always enacted to restrict men's freedom. Our founding fathers knew that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and they also knew that tyranny and total government are synonymous. So they set out to limit the power of government so that the men could be free. They knew there was no effective way to limit the misuse of power in a democracy, so they established a republican form of government where men would be ruled by law rather than by the whims of the majority of people or by other men. Now, most people have heard the story of the woman, her name was Mrs. Powell, who approached Benjamin Franklin on the steps of a building where the Constitution was enacted. It was on the 18th of September, 1787, and she said, Doctor, what have we got? What form of government do we have, a republic or a monarchy? And Benjamin Franklin replied, a republic, if you can keep it. Now, to grasp the significance of what Benjamin Franklin said, you must understand the events that led up to the destruction of ancient Athens and of ancient Rome. Athens was a prosperous city-state until it became a democracy in 508, and then the will of the majority became the law of the land, and the minority really had no rights. In fact, people have likened a democracy to two wolves negotiating with a sheep as to what they're going to have for dinner. The ruling oligarchy in ancient Greece manipulated the populace and plunged Athens into a series of disastrous wars because, you see, many people prosper from wars. First they fought the Persians and then the Peloponnesian Wars. Class warfare broke out, and soon the poor wanted to steal the wealth of the wealthy, and they wanted, of course, to do that by the democratic process. We still marveled at the architecture of the Parthenon and the enlightened culture of Greece, but the magnificent city and its glorious civilization were soon destroyed when the citizens of Athens lost confidence in their form of government. Modern pundits claim that the Athenian democracy was different from the democracy being imposed on the United States today, but that isn't true. Plato lived in Athens at that time, and of course he wrote about what happened in chapter 8 of his book, The Republic, and this is what he wrote. Democracy, which is a charming form of government, full of a variety and disorders, and dispensing a sort of equality to equals and unequals alike, we know her well. In what manner does tyranny arise? That it has a democratic origin is evident. And does not tyranny spring from democracy in the same manner as democracy from oligarchy? And democracy has her own good, of which the insatiable desire bring her to dissolution. The insatiable desire of this and the neglect of other things introduces the changes in democracy which occasionally lead to a demand for tyranny. The excesses of liberty, whether in states or individuals, seem only to pass into excesses of slavery, and so tyranny naturally arises out of democracy, and the most aggravated form of tyranny and slavery out of the most extreme form of liberty. Alexander the Great defeated Athens in 338 BC and ended the Athenian experiment with democracy. Now, Rome was established as a republic in 509 BC, and the senators who ruled the city were elected by the popular vote. But Roman law restricted what the senators could do. In other words, our senators today can do whatever they jolly well want to. They can do anything they want to. They can take from any one group or give favors to another group. But in ancient Rome, of course, and the original form of our government, why the Senate was restricted at what it could do. We were not a democracy. We were a republic. So, of course, in original ancient Rome, when they were a republic, the people were free and most of them prospered. But with the passage of time, a ruling class evolved and began using the Senate to pursue an expansionist agenda. They wanted war. So they engaged in a series of foreign wars, which enriched the oligarchy and impoverished the people because people make a great deal of profits during the wars, and of course the people have to pay for it with their taxes. Those who acquired wealth purchased vast tracts of land and farmed them with the slaves that were captured in battle, but the small farmers couldn't compete with the big farmers, and eventually they were forced to sell their land, and many of them became workers on the land that they once owned. And so class warfare broke out, and the power of the state was expanded to control the populace. People were given the right to vote. Everybody can vote, oh, this is how we're going to solve our problems. And of course, the poor wanted to get the land back that had been stolen from them, and eventually they resulted in total chaos. And Augustus Caesar intervened and replaced the Roman Republic with the Roman Empire. And that, of course, lasted as an authoritarian dictatorship until 476 AD. The article on democracy in the Encyclopedia Americana says this: democracy is one of the most controversial concepts. Not only does it have powerful enemies, but even its friends don't always agree about what they're defending. Beyond the common idea that democracy is the popular control of government, there's no universally accepted definition. And the concept is complicated by various secondary meanings common after the Industrial Revolution, such as social and economic democracy, and democracy is an ideology or total way of life. Now, if you read the Constitution of the United States, our Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers, and the constitutions of any of the various states of this nation up until 1950, you will never see the word democracy used other than to decry that form of government and declare that our nation is a republic. In their book, America in Mid-Passage, historians Charles Austin Beard and his wife Mary wrote, "At no time, at no place, in solemn convention assembled through no chosen agents, had the American people officially proclaimed the United States to be a democracy. The Constitution didn't contain that word or any word lending countenance to it, except possibly the mention of we the people in the preamble. When the Constitution was framed, no respectable person called himself a Democrat." Well, if that's true, then why do so many people believe we're a democracy? Because there's been a well-financed, orchestrated effort to convince the American people that our elected officials can do anything they wish to as long as the majority of them agree on that course of action. That's just the opposite of the intent of our founding fathers. They believe in the rule of law and hope to prevent future generations from voting themselves into slavery, which is just what's happening today. That's why our founding fathers created a republic and made it difficult to amend the Constitution. Well, in a democracy, the majority rules, and the minority has no unalienable rights. In a democracy, the government can take the wealth from one group and give it to another, as long as the majority agrees. If that were done by individuals, it'd be considered stealing, but when it's done with the authority of the state, it's considered lawful. In a democracy, everyone tries to avoid confiscating of their own wealth and hopes to obtain the wealth of others by the vote. The situation leads to dishonesty and cheating and immorality and a desire for power, disillusionment, a breakdown in law, and eventually chaos. John Bartlett's book of familiar quotations quotes Plato as saying, democracy passes into despotism. 200 years ago, Professor Alexander Tyler explained why democracies fail. And this is what he said. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until a majority of the voters discovers they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. And from that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidate, promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy and always followed by a dictatorship. Through the ages, democracy has always become dictatorship. Let me cite a few examples. Germany established a democracy after the First World War. And shortly thereafter, chaos broke out. There was looting and rioting in the streets and widespread unemployment. A sense of hopelessness gripped the nation, and the German people began looking for someone who could restore order. And that man, of course, was Adolf Hitler. He was democratically elected to office in 1932, and in January of 1933, von Hindenburg appointed him the Chancellor of Germany. The rest is history. Most people have forgotten the Italian people elected Benito Mussolini democratically in 1922. He was the founder of modern-day fascism. Following World War II, the Czechoslovakian people elected members of both the Socialist and Communist parties to their legislature, and when the Socialists walked out of the parliament to force new elections, the Communists just established a democratic dictatorship because, after all, they were duly elected. The American State Department often intervenes in democratic elections held in other countries, and if the candidates we favor isn't elected, we apply economic pressure until the populace agrees to elect our candidate to power. That happened in Rhodesia 25 years ago. We forced the electorate to elect a man named Mugabe, who was a dedicated communist, a Marxist. A decade later, we orchestrated Nelson Mandela's election in South Africa, and recently we spent $70 million to ensure the elections of our candidate in Yugoslavia. That's the modern democracy, if you believe in democracy. $2 billion was spent during the recent election cycle. Do you really have a representative government, or are we ruled by those who can afford to finance politicians? Do we have a representative government, or the finest politicians money can buy? The 1928 American Army Training Manual defined democracy this way. A government of the masses, authority derived from mass meetings of, or any form of direct expression, results in mobocracy. Attitude towards property is communistic, negating property rights. Attitude towards laws that the will of the majority shall regulate, whether it be based upon deliberations or governed by passion, prejudice, and impulse, without restraint or regard to consequences. Results in demagogism, license, agitation, discontent, anarchy. James Madison, the fourth president of the United States, wrote this, and you can find this in the Federalist Papers. You're never taught this in college, but this is what it says in the Federalist Papers. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the right of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. On June 21, 1788, Alexander Hamilton proclaimed, "It has been observed that a pure democracy, if it were practicable, would be the most perfect government. But experience has proved that no position is more false than this. The ancient democracies in which the people themselves deliberated never possessed one good feature of government. Their very character was tyranny, their figure deformity. John Adams, the second president of the United States, warned, remember, democracies never last long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. Never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. And later he noted, democracies will soon degenerate into an anarchy. such anarchy that every man will do what is right in his own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure, and every one of these will soon mold itself into a system of subordination of all the moral virtues and intellectual abilities, all the powers of wealth, beauty, wit, and science, to the wanton pleasures, the capricious will, and the execrable cruelty of one or a very few. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to William Hunter in which he stated, "The Republican is the only form of government which is not eternal at open or secret war for the rights of mankind." And in his first inaugural address, Thomas Jefferson claimed, "Sometimes it is said that man cannot be trusted with the government of himself. Can he then be trusted with the government of others? Or where have we found angels in the form of kings to govern him?" Let history answer that question, and we should carry that over to presidents. Can we trust a president to govern us? Originally, our founding fathers limited the power of government. What the president could do was limited. What the Congress could do was limited. What the courts could do was limited. The matters dealing with life, liberty, property, morality were to be left to the states and the people. But, of course, Thomas Jefferson recognized that, of course, once all power was centralized in government, there would be the end of freedom. He wrote this, "A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of government." And a man named Ames, Fisher Ames, who helped write our Constitution, warned that democracy is a volcano which conceals the fiery materials of its own destruction. These will produce an eruption and carry desolation in their way. The unknown propensity of a democracy is to licentiousness, while the ambitious call and ignorant believe it to be liberty. Governor Morris signed and penned our Constitution. He wrote, "We have seen the tumult of democracies terminate as it has everywhere terminated in despotism." John Quincy Adams, the sixth president of the United States, proclaimed, "The experience of all former ages has shown that all human government, democracy, was the most unstable, fluctuating, and short-lived." And Benjamin Russ, who signed the Declaration of Independence, said, "A simple democracy is one of the greatest of evils." John Witherspoon, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, noted, "Pure democracy cannot subsist long, nor be carried far into the Department of State. It is very subject to caprice and the madness of popular rage." Noah Webster, who compiled Webster's Dictionary, warned, "In democracy there are commonly tumults and disorders. Therefore, a pure democracy is generally a very bad government. It is often the most tyrannical government on earth." And Oscar Wilde wrote, "Democracy means simply the bludgeoning of the people by the people and for the people." Lord Acton wrote, "The only pervading evil of democracy is the tyranny of the majority, or rather, of that party, not always the majority, that succeeds by force or fraud in carrying the elections." What's the difference between a republic and a democracy? In a democracy, the elected officials can pass any sort of legislation they desire, as long as the majority of the elected officials agree. In a republic, elected officials are restricted in what they can do by law. A democracy is ruled by man, a republic is ruled by law. The opening phrase of the First Amendment of our Constitution proclaims, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." The Bill of Rights was designed to limit the authority of the federal government. The first eight amendments limited the acts that Congress could enact in respect to our personal freedom. And Amendments 9 and 10 limited the acts of Congress to the issues cited in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Thus, most of what Congress has done in recent years has been both illegal and unconstitutional. Thomas Jefferson addressed that subject when he wrote, "The several states composing the United States of America are not united on the principle of unlimited submission to their central government, delegating to that government certain defined powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of a right to their own self-government, and that whensoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. The Constitution of the United States, having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason, counterfeiting, and securities and current coin of the United States, piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and offenses against the laws of nation, and no other crimes whatsoever, and it being true of a general principle that one of the amendments of the Constitution having so declared that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people thereof. The power to create, define, and punish such other crimes is reserved of a right appertains solely and exclusively to the respective states, each within its own territory. Confidence is everywhere the parent of despotism. Free government is founded in jealousy and not in confidence. It is jealousy and not confidence which prescribes limited constitutions to bind down those who we are obliged to trust with power. That our Constitution has accordingly fixed the limits to which our confidence may go. Let the honest advocate of confidence read the Alien and Sedition Acts and say if the Constitution has not been wise in fixing limits to the government it created. In questions of power, let no more be heard of confidence in men, but bind him down for mischief by the chains of the Constitution. Well, that's what the difference is between a republic and a democracy. The powers of our central government were to be limited to all time. And of course, Thomas Jefferson recognized that in the Supreme Court of the United States were the seeds of the destruction of our way of life. For as he said, like a thief working at night, taking a little here and a little there until all power shall be centralized in Washington and we shall have a government as venal and oppressive as the government we recently escaped from. And ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what's happening today. Our founding fathers created a republic, not a democracy. The Supreme Court says, oh, there's a wall of separation between church and state, and yet the Supreme Court opens every day when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this court. The choir opens the court of the Supreme Court with a statement, God save the United States and this court. Then why is there a wall of separation between church and state? Because the Masons took over control of the Supreme Court in 1941 and controlled it in 1971. And under the cover of the Vietnam War, they centralized all power in Washington, D.C. They, of course, took God and prayer out of our schools. And, of course, a few years later, basically begin to change the structure of our society, centralizing all power with the federal government. And the fact you've never heard this before simply reflects the degree of control over the media and over what the American people think. America was founded as a republic where the people were free. Liberty and limited government were to be synonymous, and tyranny and total government were to be synonymous. Which direction do you honestly think we're heading today? We're heading towards total government and regulation of everything we do from the cradle to the grave. And until the American people understand that we don't want to establish democracies around the world, we want to establish republics to make the people free. And if we don't reclaim our republican form of government, if we don't educate the American people about the difference between a republic and democracy, then the dream that once was America, the dream that made this nation the city on the hill, the beacon of light, the hope of all mankind, simply shall fade into oblivion, and the freedom that we inherited from generation past shall be lost throughout all time. And so my plea to you is get informed, understand what's going on, and help us, of course, bring the truth to people throughout the world. America is a republic, not a democracy. Understand the difference between a republic and a democracy, and help preserve for unborn generations the freedom that we inherited from our forefathers. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time, of course, when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener support, and we do hope that many of you out there will really want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out 5 hours every weekday and to 35 stations or more every weekend with information you're not going to get from the controlled media. And the reason you have not heard most of what we've said before is because of the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford, went in and bought up the university chairs, took over our major universities. They don't allow any of these things to be discussed on most universities, and certainly they've been taken out of our textbooks. And if you doubt what I'm saying, there's a wonderful book we've published. It was printed back in 1958. It's called The Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And if you get the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, you'll find out how the great tax-exempt foundations finance communism and socialism, and convince the American people we're a democracy rather than a republic. Why? Because that's what Karl Marx wrote about in his Communist Manifesto. There was no communism in Russia. Basically, it's a ruling elite controlling the masses. Why do people of great wealth, so many people of great wealth, support socialism and centralization of power? Do you really think they're interested in sharing their wealth? Of course not. They're interested in having a ruling oligarchy and then, of course, a massive police force where everybody will be monitored, where you're emails will be monitored, your telephones will be monitored, your faxes will be monitored. Oh, of course, in the name of fighting terrorism, you must understand that, in the name of fighting terrorism, at the same time, of course, we're not doing anything about the Saudis that are financing Al-Qaeda and finance the 9-1-1 attack, the same way we're not trying to seal our southern border. The same way, of course, the administration is doing everything they can to block the pilots on our airplanes from being armed to protect us. But, of course, we've got to, of course, get the people used to submission to government because we're busy fighting terrorism. Well, ladies and gentlemen, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Our plea is become informed and help us to reach out across America if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us as we reach out across America with the truth. Now, we hope that some of you out there may want to get some of the products we mentioned. One of them is Alamax, a garlic product, which I've taken for about 8 months, and I haven't had a significant cold or flu. And, of course, we know that garlic is good for your circulation, for your blood pressure, for your cholesterol. If you'd like to know more about Alamax, call 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. If you'd like to find out about the Big Berkey water filters or the Berkey Light water filters, a wonderful thing to have in your home, in your recreational vehicle, but if anything should happen and you couldn't get a water, good potable water from regular sources, why you can use river water or pond water, this is what missionaries have used for years, go to our website, radioliberty.com. Or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for the Berkey water filters. Many of you want to set up an Institute of the Constitution in your community and teach people the difference between a republic and democracy. And, of course, teach them about our Constitution, which our elected leaders are sworn to uphold, and, of course, which they're destroying, which our Supreme Court is sworn to uphold, and they're destroying. We hope many of you, of course, will be interested in the Miracle 2 soap products we carry, or in getting a Phonopoly set to teach your children how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And if you'd like to know more about Miracle 2 soap products or Phonopoly, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. If you'd like to know what you can do if you have problems with your health insurance and you need economical health insurance, and if you're a Christian family, there's a Christian sharing program. It's called MediShare, where other families help to share your medical costs. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 for a Christian solution to the skyrocketing cost of health care. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask about MediShare. And lastly, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival in America, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God is certainly going to turn his back on America forever. And lastly, we ask you to pray for our ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until next week at the same time, may the Lord be with you. And if you'd like a free copy of this program, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. wonderful thing to have in your home and your recreational vehicle. But if anything should happen and you couldn't get a water, good potable water from regular sources, why, you can use river water or pond water. This is what missionaries have used for years. Go to our website, radioliberty.com, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV or for the Berkey water filters. Thank you.